Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WFIU. I'm Joe Wren. This week we're with Bloomington Mayor Kerry Thompson. Hello, welcome back to the show. Good to see you.
Thanks, Joe.
So it's summer in Bloomington. It just kind of happens overnight here. Graduation comes through and all of a sudden it's summer.
That's right.
We know that also can mean the start or maybe finishing up a couple of big projects in town. Do you have any updates for us?
Yes, the one we're getting the most attention for, of course, is the waterway underneath Kirkwood. And of course, there's a significant parking lot, IU parking lot that is closed behind the bicycle garage and across Dunn Street, east of Dunn Street. And so that is the reason that we did not close Kirkwood this summer, of course. And while we hope to keep that pretty well on schedule, there is a culvert that has been deemed historical that we'll have to do some historic renovation too, we expect, and so that may be slightly delayed. And then we'll have our typical street closures and repaving projects. This is the season that we do them. And of course, then there's the NDOT project that is at the Smith Road and East Third Street intersection. Again, that's not a city project, it's NDOT's, but that's causing some traffic headaches mm-hmm. for folks who live over there.
So what does that mean when there's a culvert that's historical? That's new to me. I've never heard that before.
It's new to me too.
Yeah.
But this culvert had a limestone surround to it. And so we're going through some steps to determine what exactly has to be done to restore that historic facade to the culvert.
All right, let's move on to something that happened right after we met the last time, and that was the IU protest.
Yes. I mean,
a lot has gone on here in that, and I really only had two questions. The first one was, I'm just curious of your take of what happened and how the university responded.
Well, I'm not on the inside at the university, of course, but my understanding is that the protesters were planning to set up in Dunn Meadow. The university did make some amendments to a policy that had been in place since 1969, and then the protesters were not able to stay overnight with the tents. So the university felt like it was the best practice after asking them to leave to get the state police in and ask the protesters to leave that way. And of course, our community knows there was a significant confrontation and the protesters, about 50 people were arrested. The Bloomington police did not have any interaction in that, in the removal of those protesters. I stand firmly with my belief that that we should be de-escalating and allowing people to conduct free speech protests, and that whenever possible, we should remove protesters with the least force possible. I think it was unfortunate. The optics of what happened were unfortunate. It was traumatic for our community. There's no two ways around that. We had police helicopters overhead for 3 days. There was a rifle with a spotting scope on it on the top of the Union. These are threatening. I understand from the state police's perspective, they felt like they needed to take those safety measures. But certainly, I think that we did not do all in our power to de-escalate first. So unfortunately, that escalated things. I do really appreciate that that no further actions have been taken, and the protesters are still there. They are, it appears now, peacefully protesting and having their voices heard.
What was the communication like from the city's perspective during that? I saw reports with the state police superintendent saying that he had a good communication with the city, and I believe yourself, and of course with the university, but he says there wasn't any really communication between the university and the city. Should there have been? Was there, in your opinion?
We were invited to briefings. We were not part of the decision making, so we were notified what the university was going to do. That is within their rights. It's their jurisdiction there. We appreciate being partners at the table when we can be. And it's my role to lead the city, and of course it's the university's administration's role to lead the university. We did not have direct communication with the state police about this. In the days following the removal of the protesters, the state police superintendent did reach out to me to explain his point of view.
What is the relationship like between right now the city and the university? We always call it that town and gown,
right?
Between the two. I mean, have you had a chance to talk to President Whitten?
I have, and I would say we have a very positive relationship, between the city and the university. We are working together on how we're going to form officially this town gown relationship and how we can partner better together, especially in the future. I would say that this particular incident didn't go in an ideal way from a partnership perspective. And I think that, my hope is that we can improve that in the future.
Of course, this becomes a much bigger issue with the university and President Whitten right now. It's much more than the protests. There's been votes of no confidence all across the campus, IU South Bend. But from your perspective in the city, you're saying your relationship with President Whitten is a good one.
Yes, and I think that she's providing staff resources to improve communication and to ensure that whenever possible we can be on the same page and working in partnership.
So last month after I left, I learned about a new student-oriented housing complex that would be over in the Stadium neighborhood, mm-hmm. 17th, 18th streets, about 1,100 bedrooms. What is your stance on these kind of what a lot of people call them big box student complexes, duplexes, that are coming into the city? I mean, my first thought is a developer is not going to spend millions if he can't fill them. But what's your perspective as the mayor of the city?
My perspective is that what we really need right now is workforce housing. And we need housing at all levels. But we've had a lot of student development lately, and the university has been growing their undergraduate enrollment. I don't expect that to continue. These significantly sized student housing developments that are really targeted to undergrads, not to grad students, will eventually need to pivot if they don't fill. And my hope is that the buildings themselves and the management are flexible enough to want to lease to other people when the time comes. But my goal and my priority is ensuring that any development that the city partners on and incentivizes is really targeted at meeting the needs of people who work here.
Do you have any idea, or are there statistics about how full these box student duplexes are?
There's, the reports we get is that they're well over 90% full. As we build more, I guess we'll see if those numbers change. I am interested in ensuring that we're making the most of the housing that we already have available.
So I went through that packet for that and saw, was it a little bit more than $3.4 million required contribution to the affordable housing incentives. So it's part of that developer to get approval for this. That's a lot of money that's going back to city housing, right?
That's right.
And is that being used for city housing?
So we are working on our comprehensive plan right now, and that will include this go-round. We write one every 10 years. This go-round, we will add on a specific housing plan for the city of Bloomington, and I intend to write a strategic plan for how to use that housing development fund well to incentivize the housing that we do want.
So annexation trial wrapped up just a few weeks
ago.
I was there every day, and you were there and testified. I don't know how much you can say that the trial is over, waiting for final arguments to be submitted, and then of course the judge, I'm sure, will take some time to have to sift through all that. How'd it go?
I think it went well. It's very clear to me that if we don't accomplish some annexation as the city of Bloomington, economically, both the city and county are going to suffer. And really, being able to incorporate into the city limits is part of what's going to stop our housing. And so, the county's not approving significant housing developments now. And so the results of this annexation are really critical to the health and the prosperity of our city and county, and ultimately will affect our region.
Now, you were there the first couple of days. You weren't there for every
yes.
day. Should the residents that talked those last 3 days and the mayor was not there, should they read into that?
Oh, I don't think they should read into that at all. I wanted to be there for the presentation of our case. There was some significant testimony, especially from our expert witness, who really is an expert around the country on annexation. And so it was important for me to be there to support them and to be present for the presentation of our case.
You know, just one quick thing, and I remember talking this with previous Mayor John Hamilton, that residents are worried about the city's going to come in and take my fire pit away.
Yeah.
They're going to come in and take my chickens away. They're going to come in and that. And I remember you saying a few months ago, too, that there's a lot of misconceptions about annexation. And I wonder, like, I felt like I heard that, because I don't think the city is going to come in and take a fire pit away.
Right. And I think it's important to know that, if annexation happens, I am really eager to listen and engage with our new city residents before they become city residents. And I have met with several of them and heard their concerns. The city's not going to come in and make you put a sidewalk in your front yard if you don't want one. So there's a lot of misperceptions out there. You're not going to get a $10,000 bill for the sidewalk we come in and put in either. So it's important to me that we have some open listening sessions and that I can do my best to meet the needs of any new residents that become part of the city as a result of this.
All right, Capital Improvement Board, moving ahead with the expansion
yeah.
of the Convention Center. I see you all have a big meeting coming up. What's that about?
We do. The City Council had intended to have a meeting about their desires and design and forward progress with the Convention Center, and I suggested that perhaps a collaboration meeting would be great with the city and county together, and invite the CIB, of course, to that, so that we can all get on the same page, because I think we can be a little bit like kids at Christmas with our wish lists, but really we're building one convention and civic center and one hotel. And getting in the same room and coming to a shared vision should be part of what we are trying to do, so that we're not giving something to the CIB that is really too much to handle, and instead have a collaborative conversation about what's realistic and what our shared vision is, with the understanding that our ideas probably can improve one another's.
And we know now that the north parcel for land site use, really not available without compensation from the to the city from the CIB. So I guess my question is, what if the convention center doesn't go there, if a hotel doesn't go there, what happens to that land that the city bought for $7 million?
Yeah, the administration will work with the Redevelopment Commission to make a recommendation for that. But my goal really with all of these parcels of land is that they've been laying fallow for too long waiting for a new convention center. Our development and our redevelopment of this part of our downtown is really critical. And so having land that's just surface parking lots essentially it's not the highest and best use of that land. It really deserves to thrive, and Bloomington deserves an active part of our downtown there.
Quick summer question too, because I noticed I was on Kirkwood Avenue and saw that the hanging lights that were going across Kirkwood have all been taken down.
Yes.
Is that part of, is something changing? Is something more permanent coming, or is that experiment done?
Well, the hanging lights were, of course, part of the COVID closure of that street and trying to kind of do some placemaking there. So they just had been up a while, and having to get some construction equipment down Kirkwood and things, it just doesn't make sense to keep them there. And the street's going to stay open this year because of the construction we talked about earlier. So that was just time to come down.
Any plans to put them back up or more permanent lighting like that?
So there are discussions about how we will or won't make a longer term seasonal closure of Kirkwood. And so I expect all of this will be part of that conversation.
We got to go, but I wanted to ask about, you took a trip. You were one of the mayors selected to participate in a special session of the Mayor's Institute on City Design in New York City, right?
It was.
How was it?
It was fabulous. So seven mayors were selected. We each brought a case project with us. I brought the Beeline District that goes from the Trades District down to Hopewell. And there was a team of 12 resource professionals that all fed into the case study. They'll be sending us their formal feedback in the next couple weeks, but got really incredible feedback that I think will hopefully impact the convention center, but will certainly impact how we're thinking about trades and Hopewell and the district in between. We want a really safe trail, and we want a trail that's really alive and vibrant at all hours of day and night.
That's really interesting to hear, because I know it's very early, obviously, in the convention center expansion, but they had a little mock-ups of the different site plans.
Right.
And I saw a lot of them, the Beeline Trail up against the new convention center, and that was their docking with all the semi-trucks. And I thought, what a great opportunity to mix the Beeline with the convention center.
Right.
Like, you'd think that would be a thing.
Right. I mean, the Beeline really should be the asset that pulls everybody in. And so there should be some kind of front door to any development we do along the Beeline from here on. That in itself will help keep the trail safer, but it's a treasure. And so people coming to the community are going to want to use it. And so whether we put the hotel against the Beeline with maybe their outdoor courtyard area, or whether maybe the convention center has an outdoor event venue that opens as a plaza onto the Beeline, the designers will have great ideas about it, but really we should be using it as an asset.
Yeah, gotta go, but I'd like to leave the last 30 seconds to you. Any announcements, anything that we need to know?
I think, we have, we of course approved the Summit District a week ago Wednesday. That is a really exciting new housing development, and that's going to provide a lot of the workforce housing that we need. Council did put a request in, which the developer was happy to comply with, that those are going to be 40% owner occupied. That's really significant. What that does is really bring some permanent residents into that district. Again, connectivity to the trails and other assets, and immediate access to 69 to go down to Crane or up to Cook or Catalan. So just what we need.
Thank you so much. See you in June.
Thanks.